3 minutes and 35 seconds to decide who moves on to the sub-state finals on Saturday at 5:30. Boyd trailing by three. Here's Brockman. Three-guard weave. Caleb's three. Good! He rattles it in, and we're tied at 32.
Up at 20. Seven turnover the game for Sylvan Lucas. Up ahead, Cooper Brown ahead of the pack. Lobs it to Schoen with the alley-oop. Stop! Cooper Brown to Jay Schoen for the slam across the right block. That ties the game up at 25. 5 seconds. William Rudolph dribbling out the clock. Sylvan Lucas concedes. The Lakeside Knights are on to the sub-state championship for the first time since 2012. They win it 48-35 over Sylvan Lucas.
Some of the action last night on the radio as the Lakeside boys and the Osborne boys will meet for the sub-state championship game tomorrow in Sylvan Lucas at 5:30. Should be a great matchup. We thought it could end up being that very thing. And last night, Osborne and Lakeside boys took care of business. And here to recap the games that Dusty called down from Sylvan Lucas last night. And then also I'll jump in after that with the bullet wrap from last night and update you with all the scores from our area last night as well. Here's Dusty.
Yes, as Wade said, the Osborne and Lakeside boys picked up victories last night in the semifinals in the 1A Division 1 sub-state. In that first game, it was Osborne over Rollins County, 53-39. A little bit of a slow start offensively for Osborne, but they went on a 10-0 run after trailing 7-4 in the first quarter to lead 14-7 after 1. They led by 7 at halftime, 14 after 3. They go on to win it by 14, 53-39. Johnny Hamel with 18 points for the Bulldogs. Ronnie Thompson added 11 points. Osborne struggled a little bit from the free throw line early in the game, but they did not struggle in the fourth quarter as they were able to knock down 13 free throws in the fourth quarter alone. So it was a great finish to the game from the charity stripe for Osborne as, again, they end up with the win, improving to 20-2 on the season. And our athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health in Beloit was Johnny Hamel. He was a co-athlete of the game for Osborne. The other one was Rollins County's junior Brady Beckman, who finished with 17 points for the Buffaloes. Hamel with 18 for Osborne, Thompson 11. The block of the game from H&R Block and Beloit went to Grady Walters, and the assist from Grady Walters to Doak Guttery on a three-point play in the second quarter was our connection of the game from Cunningham Telephone and Cable Connect with us. So Osborne moved on to the sub-state championship with that victory, and they were awaiting their opponent. It was Lakeside or Sylvan Lucas, and as we mentioned, the Knights win 48-35, the final in that one. Lakeside trailed 10-0 early in this game. Kylan Cunningham finally put Lakeside on the board with a three-pointer with 2 minutes left in the first quarter. And after that, the floodgates opened. Lakeside went on a 19-2 run. They went on an 8-0 run to finish the first quarter, trailed 10-8 after one, but then added five straight to start the second quarter to go up 13-10. And then 19-12 was eventually the score, but Sylvan Lucas didn't go away. They came back on a 7-0 run, finished off by a three-pointer from Valden Dole just across half court, not quite a full four-court, or not quite the entire half-court shot there. From Dole, but a great shot nonetheless. It went nothing but net and tied the game at 19 at halftime. But in the second half, Lakeside, after a little back-and-forth start in the third quarter, they were able to start to pull away. And they led 33-29 after three. Had the big dunk that you heard earlier from Jay Schoen on the alley-oop from Cooper Brown. And again, they were able to get that 33-29 lead. Finished it off at the free throw line, much like Osborne did in the first game. The Lakeside boys were able to finish things off. They went 9 of 10 from the free throw line in the fourth quarter. Tyler Schoen and Kylan Cunningham each was 17. Tyler went 7 of 8 from the line, 6 of 6 in the fourth quarter. And Cunningham had 5 threes, part of his 17 points. Our co-athletes of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health in Beloit. Our connection of the game was the alley-oop from Cooper Brown to Jay Schoen, and then the block of the game from H&R Block and Beloit went to Jay Schoen as well. Lakeside's now 17-5. They won 16 of their last 18 games. Sylvan Lucas finished their year at 18-4. They were led by Valden Dole and Lane Homewood, who each scored 9 points apiece in the loss for Sylvan Lucas. Again, Osborne and Lakeside. Lakeside's into the sub-state championship for the first time since 2012 when they ended up winning that and making it to state. So Osborne-Lakeside, we're looking for an electric atmosphere tomorrow in that boys' sub-state championship in Sylvan Grove. So, and we'll have that one for you on Katy Country 94 pregame at about 5:20 and tip-off at 5:30 coming up tomorrow. And you had...
Did you give all the scores from last night from the area?
Recap,
no, go ahead, give all the scores, please. Okay.
Yep. Scores from last night. Again, we'll have a recap of Beloit Council Grove. Council Grove winning 40-32. Southeast Saline won over Smoky Valley 57-42. Also in the 1A Division I Substate at Clifton Clyde. Clifton Clyde winning 70-26 over Lincoln. Lincoln finished their year at 6-17. 1A Division II Substate, St. John Sipton hosting that at Beloit High School. Logan Palka over Thunder Ridge 49-33. Thunder Ridge finished their year at 14-9. Northern Valley a 60-57 win over St. John Sipton. Blue Jays spot hard in that one, but couldn't quite get the upset over the number one seed. Jared Eitzman with 19, Luke Bates 14, and Daniel Eilert had 11. St. John Sipton finishes their year at 12-10. And then 1A Division II Substate at Axel. Hanover beats Southern Cloud 66-35. Smith Center is 7-11 on the season with that one. Also from the Northern Plains League, Wilson was beaten by Central Plains 68-45. We'll talk more about Central Plains, I know, coming up in the show as they get the win and move on to the championship there in that Substate. Wilson finished the year 5-17. And then 2A Girls Substate at Plainville. Smith Center winning over Hoxie 53-43. Lady Red trail by 9 in the third. They were down 38-35 after 3, but had an 18-5 fourth quarter to pick up the win, 53-43 over Hoxie to move on to the championship game. Coming up tomorrow, they'll take on St. Francis Shylin in that 2A Substate Championship on the girls' side in Plainville tomorrow at 5:30. If you missed any of the scores, you can find them all posted at ncksports.com. All the Substate brackets are there as well.
All right, last game I had on the radio, Beloit, the number 2 seed, taking on 3 seed Council Grove. Minneapolis, 3A boys substate semifinal last night. And really the story of this game was Beloit struggled to score and Council Grove made some, and there's no way to describe it other than some fortunate, lucky bounces of the ball that went through the rim. And this is a low-scoring basketball game. Very interesting because the two teams, very similar in certain ways, just like the Beloit Council Groves were, girls were on Tuesday in the first round of 3A girls substate play. In regards to, they're both seated closely, records are close. Council Grove is 13-8, Beloit 15-6. Council Grove the 3 seed, Beloit the 2 seed. And last night, Council Grove had their center or power forward, Cohen Hula, who was 0 for 13 officially going into the game last night from 3, hadn't made one all year. He switched one in the first quarter. Gavin Mills, 6'3", junior, kind of a swing post player. He had made 2 threes all year, 2 of 10. He switched to 3. A freshman for Council Grove, Bryson Palmquist, got caught no man's land underneath the bucket driving, threw up a wild over-the-shoulder, blind, didn't even look at the goal, and somehow banked it in. Then later in the ball game, Mills came down, foot was on the line, top of the key, shot it, hit the heel hard, went straight up in the air, came down, hit the front of the rim, and then usually that bounce is still off, backspun into the net for a bucket. And then the one that you just, and I had this sick feeling in my stomach in the first half, I said it even halftime, they're making these shots and you just wonder. And it reminded me, and I don't want to bring up bad memories, but I remember, you know, a fortunate three-point shot by Gerard, by a guy that doesn't need to shoot threes, but was a good player at the end of a quarter at State. And I had a bad feeling after that shot went in. And I had a bad feeling, and then just to add to the bad feeling, Beloit was down 27-21. Beloit went 6 minutes without a point in the third quarter. They were only down 6, though. They scored 4 straight. Council Grove, their best three-point shooter, banks in what was about a 25-28 footer straight away, banked it in. You don't try to bank in three-pointers straight away. You don't usually try to bank in threes, period.
Yeah.
And he banked it in. And I gave him a 5-point lead. I'm like, dear Lord, it's just their night. And Beloit had some shots. Wyatt Brockman had at least 2 that were halfway down and out. And so it just wasn't Beloit's night in regards to those shots. And if you add them up, it ends up being about 14 points that Council Grove scored on shots that you don't expect guys to make at all or a little bit fortunate. And that's the thing when you get in elimination games, one and dones. We've seen it with KU. I even said it during the broadcast last night. When those two bigs made threes, I flash back to when Northern Iowa played KU. Mm-hmm. And Northern Iowa's big man made 2 threes all year, and he made like 2 or 3 in the first half against KU. It's like, that's not in the scouting report. I mean, you can plan for about as much as you can. The key is you want to stop the guys you know are really, really good. And Beloit's defense last night was really, really good. You hold a team to 40 points, you usually are going to win. Instead, Beloit just couldn't score, and Beloit tied it after being down by 7. They went on a 7-0 run in the fourth quarter, made it 32-32 on a three-pointer by Caleb Burks, but then Beloit did not score the final 3.5 minutes. So you think about it. They didn't score the first 6 minutes of the third quarter. They didn't score the final 3.5 of the fourth. And then it was Hunter Brindle hitting a legitimate three from the left wing with a minute 50 to go. I broke a 32-32 tie, and that was the dagger, and Beloit loses by 8. They're in their very successful season at 15-7, a 10-win improvement from a year ago, and it was their lowest offensive output of the year. Bad time for it, but it happened last night. Council Grove, that was their second lowest output of the year, so Beloit's defense was pretty solid. This is pretty wacky when you really think about it. The Beloit girls went to Council Grove on Tuesday. Council Grove was the higher seed slightly. They were a 4. Beloit girls were a 5. That game was 32-32 with a minute to go. Miley Brown switched a 3-pointer from the left wing. That was the game-deciding shot. Mm-hmm. Beloit went on the win, broke a 32-30 tie, and they never trailed the rest of the way. Fast forward 48 hours later. I kid you not, you can't make this up. Council Grove boys, the seed lower than Beloit. 32-32 tie. Same end of the floor to my left. Same almost exact spot, left wing. Miley hit hers with a minute to go. Hunter Brindle hit his with a minute 50 to go from almost the same spot. Broke a 32-32 tie, 35-32 after the three. Beloit boys don't score again. Council Grove goes on the win. Beloit girls take out Council Grove. Council Grove boys come back and take out the Beloit boys. Crazy. When you think about that, it's the exact same spot. Almost the exact same spot on the same end of the floor, and the game is tied 32-all, and both of those shots were, in essence, the final dagger.
Yeah. Well,
the same schools involved.
Yeah, it's like first you got to get to the point where it's the same schools.
Yeah.
Right? And then build off of that, right? And that doesn't happen a lot where you see the same schools in the postseason. You know, sometimes you'll see that, and I've seen it in 1A before. I think, you know, you have the same sub-state championships even, right, back-to-back. With just two schools involved in both of the four spots, but that's you got to get to that point first, and then to see it like that, and you're one seed behind them on both sides, and that is crazy for sure.
On paper going in, you think it's fairly even both games.
Exactly.
Too. Here's something that stood out last night. What helps you when you're struggling offensively? Get to the foul line, right? If you're struggling to make buckets, get to the foul line. Both teams struggled to make baskets. Both teams struggled offensively, and I think that has a lot to do with the other team's defense, no question. Beloit last night attempted one free throw the whole game. One free throw the whole game.
Yeah.
That was a three-point play at Caleb Burks in the first half. They were 1-1 from the line. Council Grove attempted 6 free throws and 3 of 4 in the final 30 seconds. So they were 1 of 2 up to that point. Mm-hmm. We had 3 free throws shot until the final 30 seconds of the game. So neither team got easy points. There weren't really any easy buckets for the most part for either team. And the other thing that made these two teams so similar, they didn't have much of a bench. Both teams go 6 deep, one guy off the bench. And last night, 6 players of the 10 starters didn't rest 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
3 Beloit starters and 3 Council Grove starters never left the game. Never got a breather. Never got a rest. Because your season's on the line, so you're going to go with your best. And I will say this, one of the things that Council Grove did last night, and I am surprised that more high school teams don't do this. However, you have to have a good big that can screen, and you need a really good ball handler or two. And Council Grove last night screened Beloit to death. It was a lot of pick and roll, ball screens on the perimeter. And to Beloit's credit, I thought Wyatt Brockelman and Caleb Burks did a great job of chasing after the two best guards for Council Grove. But that takes so much energy. Mm-hmm. You are fighting through screen after screen, and you know you can't give them a lot of room because if they get a little bit of room, they can bury it. And that's what happened on the game-winning three. It wasn't horrible defense, but went under, got caught under the screen, and just a little bit sliver of an opening, and the Brindle kid hit it. And the Brindle kid, I think, only took like 5-6 shots the whole night. He didn't force it. He did a really, really good job. I thought Council Grove didn't force the ball as much as Beloit did. I thought Council Grove was the more patient team. Ryan Eilert, head coach of Beloit Children's, he talks about patience. It was a key last night.
They were way more patient than I thought they'd be. They were content. You know, the first possession of the game is about a minute and a half possession for them, and you know their guards are good ball handlers, and so they were content just kind of passing around the perimeter and setting ball screen, and then when the opportunity presented itself, you know, shoot the ball. And, you know, defensively, I thought we did a good job. You know, even their makes were contested, you know, they're on their two good shooters. And game plan-wise, we were able to cover up and not give a lot of drives because we had guys helping. But ultimately, it comes down to too many empty possessions for us.
Neither team really had much of an offensive presence inside because Bryce Beisner is pretty much taken away. He had to work really hard for the three buckets that he got, as the Hula kid is a pretty big wide body. And then when you play really good help defense, both teams I thought did a good job of that, that means you're not going to get a lot of easy buckets. The only way you're going to get easy buckets is a steal and a layup. And Beloit had, I know, one or two of those. But that means then what happens? You got to make jumpers. You got to make perimeter shots. And last night, Beloit is a really good three-point shooting team, or pretty good. They only made three threes last night. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of too many that were wide open. I mean, there were a few, but not wide, wide open. Council Grove made seven threes. And honestly, that's a difference in the game right mm-hmm. there. And yeah, some fortunate bounces on some shots. But I'll give the two post guys I mentioned that hardly hitting threes all year long. They swished both their threes. Those were not lucky bounces. They swished them. They just hadn't made them all year long. They saved it for that. But in the end, Beloit just... their offensive struggles caught up to them.
You know, offensively, we weren't very efficient in a low possession game. And so, you know, it's one of those that you can't change it, and you learn to deal with it. That's why sports, you know, is a huge part of developing kids, is sometimes things happen that out of your control, and you just learn to, you know, deal with it.
So Beloit loses last night 40-32. They had 11 points in the second half, five field goals, and we mentioned those two long offensive droughts, which – you know, they still were in the game. That's the crazy thing. You go 9.5 minutes without scoring a point, 6 minutes in the third and the last 3.5 of the fourth, and you still have a chance. That tells you that your defense did its job, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's just that you weren't able to make enough shots, and sometimes that happens. Elimination game, you could play them, you know, tomorrow night or tonight, and all of a sudden Beloit makes those shots, and those other shots don't go in. But it's not a best 4 out of 7,
mm-hmm.
where the best team almost always wins when it comes to a series like that in the NBA. It's a one and done, and that's why it's called March Madness. And Beloit had a really good year, 10-win improvement, no doubt. And Owen Eilert and Caleb Burks, two starters, graduated. Will graduate. They were their last game as a Beloit Trojan last night. Also, Seth Kahn and then Jackson Rexroth, who was out all year with an injury. So, Beloit have something to build on going into next year. But it is that abruptness. You know, where your season's just suddenly over, especially for the seniors, it makes it tough at every level.
I tell you, like, we feel it even as a broadcaster.
Yeah, right?
It's like, oh, we think we're going on, and boom, season's over, you know, for whatever team you might be covering. And it's like, oh, that was their last game. That's crazy. And so. It is. It's a very abrupt ending and just final. And it's just it's hard to deal with no matter what. And, you know, almost every team except one in each class, technically two, because you have a third place game. But everybody else is going to end their season with a loss in each class. So it's, you know, only one team is going to be holding up that big trophy at the end of the year. And there's heartbreak no matter what.
Yeah, Council Grove only scored 17 in the second half. Kellen Marshall averaged 18 a game. Beloit held him to 9, half his average. Hunter Brentel with 13, right on his average. I mean, Beloit did a good job on their best players. It's just they couldn't score enough. Caleb Burks with 11 points and 2 threes. He was our SNS Drug and Home Health Athlete of the Game. Bryce Beisner with the HR block of the game. And the Cunningham Telephone Cable Connection game. Owen Eiler, a nice pass to Bryce Beisner for a bucket in the third quarter. All right, so we turn our attention to tonight. And then we will update you on who's into the sub-state championship games in 3A boys, 2A girls, 1A Division I, and 1A Division II boys. And we're going to tell you about a team that is 3-18 that is one win away from making a state tournament. Nothing wrong with that, is there?
No.
Please explain to me again why we have to have two divisions in 1A. I'm all ears. I'm saying have to, because – to me, we don't need it.
No, we don't.
I've always been against it. You imagine, well, there's more schools in 1A. Well, there's less and less schools every year in 1A. More consolidations, less and less schools. And the quality of play goes down when you split it into two classes. And when you get to the state tournaments, I've talked to referees, officials. I even talked to some administrators. And they're like, no, this is not good for state tournament basketball. And on top of it, all is when you don't at least divvy up the sub-states to where every sub-state at least has some winning teams. And we had a sub-state that not a single winning team. So if you're gonna break it into two divisions, 1A Division 1 and 2, then let's go ahead and seed it so that we actually can still get the best teams in those two split divisions to go to state. But that's apparently too difficult. And it's just sad. But we'll get to it. We'll tell you who it is coming up in a little bit. But we'll preview Substate 4 tonight. Dusty's got two games on the radio. He has Osborne against Oberlin tonight at 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:50, followed by Sylvan Lucas Girls against Atwood Rollins County. Trina Luters, head coach of the Osborne Lady Bulldogs, who made it to state a year ago. They are a team that, well, they are the favorite.
We're going to have to get in. We're going to have to focus on rebounding and being tough inside and focus on our defense and what we need to do to kind of stop them. We watched some game film on them and got to see them play in person. And I just think the big focus for us is going to be taking care of their piece of the puzzle. You know, every player has a job that they're really good at, and things click together, and we have a good ball game.
Well, Dusty, what about this matchup tonight? Hey. I mean, Osborne, that's who they played in the sub-state final last year, was Oberlin, if I remember correctly, because I was covering that over there. Of course, then Osborne didn't get to go to actual state tournament. It was, you know, you have to go all the way out to, where'd they go?
Jetmore.
Yeah, way out there.
I'll never forget that. Marysville to Jetmore in a night or two.
Good times. But what about this matchup tonight?
Yeah, the Decatur community, they're a team that's, Lakeside saw them on Friday, obviously, it's a physical team. It's a team, like Coach Luter said, they're going to have to rebound well because they killed Lakeside on the glass last Friday. So if they can do that, and, you know, Osborne typically has played pretty good defensively throughout the year and are doing a very good job on that end of the floor. So, I could see, honestly, when we talk about both games, but I could see them both being games in, like, the mid-40s with the winning score, right, because they're both going to be physical games, I would imagine. Again, no, Decatur Community Oberlin, they're a team that is going to crash the glass, and so you've got to be, sound in your boxing out and everything that takes to keep them off the offensive rebounds and get those for yourself. And then for Osborne, it's the same thing it always is. It's putting pressure defense on and getting out in transition and scoring. And, again, they do have a win last year over this team that put them into the state tournament, so they know maybe some of the things that they needed to do last year. Both teams look very, very similar, actually, from the teams that played last year as well. So looking forward to this one, but Osborne definitely a favorite. If they come out and play their game, they should be in good shape tonight, I feel like.
They'll still have that one at 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:50 tonight on KDCountry 94 and KDCountry94.com from Sylvan Grove. And then the second game is the homestanding Sylvan Lucas Lady Mustangs taking on Atwood Rollins County. Craig Batchman on the matchup tonight.
Scoring is spread out so evenly among their girls and stuff, and they do a good job defensively. They're pretty quick and stuff and push the ball down the floor, so I think it'll be a great matchup for us.
All right, matchup number two tonight.
You talk about Rollins County does a good job defensively. That's what Sylvan Lucas wins on is defense, and so that's why I said a little bit ago, I feel like we got two games that could be kind of lower-scoring games tonight that the winner could advance to a sub-state championship. And this one's much harder for me to kind of handicap because, one, I haven't seen Rollins County actually in person with my own eyes, but they were just 8-12 last year. They're 17-4 coming into this. They have a couple freshmen that have really played well for them. People that are from Lakeside might remember Tayton Dewey, who was a very tall middle blocker for their volleyball team that made it to state, and she's just a freshman and is having a lot of success there for that squad, and definitely one to look out for. Again, this is going to be a game that will be decided down the stretch, I feel like, and both of these teams are going to bring it defensively. Both of these teams are going to play a physical brand of basketball, and again, that might make for an ugly game at times. I'm just kind of putting that out there just from that standpoint of the physicality and the amount of defense that they're going to play. Usually when I say ugly game in basketball, it means the offense isn't as effective as you might want it to be because the other teams are making it that way. So looking forward to this one. This is two 17-4 teams, and it could go either way. It's 50-50 right now for me. I know that Atwood coach told me he's worried. Rollins County coach, he's like, I'm worried about the matchup. Craig Batchman is like, well, it's not a great matchup. I mean, so you just don't know one way or the other how the coaches are even feeling about it. And moving into tonight's game, I'm really looking forward to seeing how that one comes out because it could be a grinded out game here tonight in Sylvan Grove.
Okay, and the two winners tonight will play tomorrow at 7 o'clock there in Sylvan Grove. And if we have a local team involved, we will have it on the radio tomorrow night on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. We'll have the Osborne Lakeside Boys Championship game tomorrow with pregame about 5:20 tomorrow on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. Osborne Lakeside. We know some team from Osborne County is going to the state tournament.
Yes.
Out in Dodge City. So we do know
always
that.
Nice to go into a game guaranteed that an area team is going to make it to state.
We know we'll have at least one team making it to the state basketball tournament coming up next week. We're guaranteed that. So we do know we'll have at least some state basketball for you coming up next week in Dodge City. The Beloit girls in action tonight on Z96.3 The Lake against Southeast Saline. The Beloit girls snapping a four-game slide with that one-point victory over Council Grove on Tuesday, 38-37. Beloit girls are 10-11, Southeast 18-3. League rivals, Beloit lost Southeast back in December in Gypsum by 7. They led early in the fourth in that one. They met on February 8th in Beloit, and Beloit was down 1 with a minute 50 to go, and Southeast went on 9-2 run to close it out and win it by 8. So both those games came down to the fourth quarter. Beloit has a third opportunity. The pressure certainly should be on Southeast Saline as the number one seed. It'll be in Minneapolis tonight. It's the second of the two semifinals. Smoky Valley Riley County will play at 6. We'll have the second one, Beloit Southeast Saline, part 3. And that'll be pregame around 7:20 tonight on Z96.3 Lake. KatyCountry94.com, our live video stream at NCKSSports.com, via Beloit Trojan Channel. Sean Remus on that third opportunity to knock off Southeast. This one is the most important.
We're super excited for this third opportunity. I mean, yeah, we had them on the ropes both times, and we know what they have, and they know what we have, and so we match up well. We're hoping that our height will be a disadvantage for them, and we'll be able to get some offensive rebounds and easy buckets, but they run the floor extremely well. They're very talented. They shoot the ball extremely well, so we just got to defend, and then we got to find ways to score on our end. There's no magic thing that we're going to try to do or they're going to try to do. It just should be a good ball game again, and we'll just let the kids play it out and see who comes out in the end.
Well, last time Southeast Saline won, it was the sophomore Potocic who had 16, and she doesn't normally do that. So that was a career high. So if you're Beloit, you got to be thinking, listen, it took a really special performance from a kid that sophomore hadn't scored a lot all year long to beat us. We did a pretty good job on their best players. I think the challenge again for Beloit, much like the boys last night, is I think the Beloit girls' defense will be fine. It'll be there. Defense always travels. It should travel wherever it goes. The fleeting part is the offense, and I think that's the question you have. Can Beloit score enough tonight in the girls' game? Because if they don't hit three-pointers, they really struggle on offense unless they can get Addie Budke or Cassandra Thompson going inside, and they do have the height advantage, and let's see if it's something they can take advantage of tonight against Southeast Saline. As I said, the pressure's on Southeast. So if this game is tight in the fourth quarter, Southeast has more of the experience with the Slazner girl at point guard. I mean, they've got more experience in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the pressure will still be on Southeast if it's tight going into the fourth quarter. So it should be a really good matchup tonight. The Battle of the Trojans, Southeast Saline, Beloit at 7:30, pregame at 7:20 on Z96.3 The Lake. Okay, so let's go ahead and tell you the sub-state finals for the boys. We'll just go through the state here in Class 3A. Galena will take on Columbus. That's the top two seeds down at Fredonia. That is tomorrow at 5:30. All these boys, sub-state finals at 3A tomorrow at 5:30. The 3A boys out at Goodland, TMP, the one seed, will take on the two seed Norton. Kingman. It is Anthony Chaparral that was the 5 seed. He'll take on the 3 seed Hugoton. Interesting subplot here. The two head coaches for those two schools were teammates on Scott City's basketball teams back around 2014 and 15 when they won state titles. Sloan Baker's head coach of Anthony Harper Chaparral. Trey O'Neill's head coach of Hugoton. So kind of interesting subplot right there.
That'd be a fun game probably, but a nerve-wracking game, I would guess, had any kind of love for each other when they were in school anyway.
Right. The boys' final tomorrow in Minneapolis. Southeast, number one seed, beat Smoky Valley last night, 57-42. They'll take on Council Grove and knocked off Beloit. That's at 5:30 tomorrow. Southeast will be a heavy favorite in that one. So much for my son saying that Southeast Lean has gut feeling. His gut needs to be reassessed on that one. The 3A boys, sub-state at Nickerson. And it's sad. You know, this is where Keisha could get this fixed easily. Kelly Williams. I covered games of his when he played at Nemaha Valley. He has a full-fledged sub-state setup for 3A and 2A that would actually require less travel for a lot of teams in the first round than what we currently have and would reseed the sub-states to where we wouldn't have a 22-0 team taking on a 21-1 team in a sub-state final. But that's what you have at Nickerson. Cheney knocked off Haven. And Heston beat Wichita Collegiate. So Heston and Cheney. Cheney undefeated. Heston, with just one loss, will play in a sub-state final. And that really is going to feel more like a state semifinal or a final. And we've seen this before. We saw Beloit and Scott City 1 year, number one and two in the state, meeting in the sub-state finals. They should have met in the sub-state, in this, they should have met in the state championship game. This can be fixed. It's just up to an organization to fix it. And nobody's holding their breath. Osage City against Pleasant Ridge is a 3A sub-state boys final up in Pomona. And also on the boys' side in 3A, this is a tough sub-state too. Royal Valley, who is now 21-1, will take on Sabetha, who's 17-4, and they beat Nemaha Central last night by 3 in overtime. And Nemaha Central was 18-3. So Nemaha Central and Sabetha, I mean, you had three teams in that sub-state with four losses or less. See, if you reseed it, you won't have those issues. And then 2A girls sub-state finals are set for tomorrow. Valley Heights against St. Mary's up in Belleville. And out down at Dexter, it'll be 2A girls Garden Plain against West Elk. And Linden, it'll be Northern Heights versus Mission Valley. It's a Sublette, it'll be Sterling versus Elkhart, Sterling undefeated. And Uniontown girls sub-state final, Pittsburgh Colgan undefeated against Uniontown, who has just three losses. And Valley Falls, the sub-state final, Jackson Heights versus Jeff County North. And also, it will be Berean Academy against Whitewater Remington down at Whitewater Remington in a 2A. And I skipped over the local one. Of course, that's Smith Center taking on St. Francis. And that'll be at 5:30 coming up tomorrow out in Plainville. Smith Center Lady Red made it, of course, to state in volleyball, won it all in volleyball. And last night, shorthanded, but found a way to beat Hoxie by 10. So the Lady Red now 18-4, one win away from making it to state in both basketball and volleyball in the same season.
Yeah, they're having a great season. They're a little shorthanded right now, though. Miley Raby's not playing right now. Gracie Kirkhoff had missed some games already this year.
And she's not 100%.
Smith Center and is not 100%, like you said. So they're fighting through it, but battled last night, and you hope they can maybe battle one more time to make it to Manhattan coming up next week.
They're in trouble. They're down 9 to Hoxie and down 3 going fourth quarter, but came back to win. 1A Division I boys sub-state finals tomorrow, Maxville against Little River. Also, it will be Clifton Clyde taking on Solomon. That's the top two seeds advancing there. At Frankfurt, it is Care Paravel versus Troy. In Jetmore, it is Ness City versus Jetmore-Hodgman County. At South Gray, Montezuma, is South Gray versus Meade in the boys' sub-state final there. And, of course, we know Osborne Lakeside in the Sylvan Lucas sub-state final tomorrow at 5:30, which we'll have on KD Country 94. Down to Opie, Opie versus Burlingame in a sub-state final there. And at Udall in 1A Division I, it's Norwich versus Wichita Classical School there out of Wichita. And we move on to 1A Division II sub-states for boys. Finals tomorrow, it'll be Hanover versus Axtell. Boy, that's been a lot of battles like that we've seen between those two when it's come to football, of course, an eight-man. And over in Beloit, Beloit High School, it'll be Northern Valley, who squeaked by St. John's Tipton last night. They'll take on Logan Palco. And also in Caldwell, it'll be Attica versus Caldwell for the sub-state championship. And in Fowler, it'll be Buckland versus Ingalls. And in Lebo, the sub-state final tomorrow on boys play, Lebo versus Waverly. In Sharon Springs, the boys' final is Greeley County of Tribune versus Grainland, Wheatland, Grinnell. That's out at Sharon Springs. Stafford High School, it'll be Roselle Pawnee Heights. That's where Gary Patterson used to go. versus Stafford. And that's the sub-state final there. And I saved the best for last, ladies and gentlemen. Lost Springs Center, the number one seed with a losing record coming into sub-state out at Claflin. 8-10. They are now 10-10.
At least they're 500.
They're 500, although they got a bye, so that's one of their wins. So 10-10, but didn't have to play one. And they're going to take on Central Plains. And Dusty warned me about this when the bracket came out. He said, don't be surprised Central Plains wins that sub-state. Central Plains boys play tough schedule, no doubt. Central Plains boys, it's a six-team, 1A Division II sub-state. That's part of the problem right there. When you got to have six-team sub-states, you only have to win two games to make state. I think it's a flawed system. I think you should have to win three games to get the state. Call me old-fashioned. I think you really need to earn it. Now, I know some teams have to win three to get there if you're not a number one or a number two seed. I get it. But I don't think there should be byes at sub-state. I just don't. We've already watered it down and eliminated regionals. So now we got two divisions, 1A, Division 1 and 2. We have less 1A schools every year, more consolidations left and right. And the argument is, well, we got the most schools in our classification. That's why we should break it down. Okay, fine. Now tell me how this is good for high school basketball. And this is not a knock, personally, on Central Plains boys. It isn't their fault. The Central Plains boys are simply going where Keisha assigned them. And that is to stay home and host it. So, yeah, the sixth seed. Now, granted, the Central Plains girls, number one team in the state, 1A Division 2, they're great. The Central Plains boys get to host their own sub-state. They had to go on the road to Tescott, who was 3-16. Tescott was the 3 seed in the sub-state at 3-16. That's laughable. And Central Plains boys were 1-18, the bottom seed in the 6-team sub-state, and they beat Tescott by 28. Then last night, on their home floor, they beat the 2 seed, who was 4-14, Wilson. Central Plains won by 23. Let me get this right. 1-18 Central Plains has won their first two sub-state games by 28 and 23 points against teams seeded above them. And now Central Plains boys will go into the finals on their home floor tomorrow at 5:30 against the 10-10 Lost Springs Center team. Ladies and gentlemen, Central Plains, all they have to do is win tomorrow at 5:30 on their home floor, and you will have a 4-18 team at the state basketball tournament at Great Bend. This should be the poster child of why we need to eliminate the two divisions in 1A, or if you still want to be stuck on that hill, want to die on that hill, fine, then we need to completely change the situation and how you seed 1A Division 1 and 1A Division 2, because this is a joke, and we saw it coming before it even happened. You projected it. It wasn't hard to figure out. Central Plains plays a much tougher schedule than Wilson and Tescott. And they had rolled those teams, absolutely annihilated them in the first two rounds of sub-state. And now they play a team that really, honestly, is 9-10. They got a bye. Yeah. They're 10-10. And so, you know, if I think Keisha's probably cheering for Lost Springs Center to win. Because
most
that would,
likely,
I would think, because
you
want winning records at state. You do not want a 4-18 team being at state. But that's what you might have.
Yeah, and listen, I cover basically the Northern Plains League exclusively. You know, I've done some bullet games this year too, but I know what the MPL is and who they have and who their teams are at the bottom. And when I saw the bracket come out, I said Central Plains has a free ride to the championship at 1-18.
And
I could see it. Mm-hmm. And they dominated the last two games against Tescott and Wilson. I mean, they weren't close. And I didn't figure they would be, to be completely honest with you. But Central Plains plays in a very tough league, the Central Prairie League. They play at the Russell Tournament, where they're playing 3A, 4A schools. You know, they're battle-tested whether their record's good or not.
Right.
And they know and understand. And Central Plains has a rich tradition of being very, very good in athletics. And that goes before Central Plains, when it was Claflin and Quivira Heights,
yes,
too.
Yes, sir.
I mean, they have a tradition that they're trying to uphold. And when they have a year that they're 1-18, they probably don't feel good about it. But they do feel good about the fact that they get to host a sub-state. And then they get a look at the teams that are at this sub-state and be like, we might be 1-18, but those people have – who have they played?
Yeah.
And, you know, we're figuring it out. And yes, I was putting the schedules in for sub-state and put Wilson on automatic buy into the second round. I'm like, wait, what's their record? They had 4 wins. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's a first-round buy with a 4-win team. Central Plains has a chance to win this sub-state. And – here we are. I don't know how good Center is. I know nothing about Center because they play even further down south and east of us, right? And so I don't know a lot about them. But I did know coming in that there was a very legitimate chance that Central Plains could make state, and I felt very, very confident that they would be at least one win away from state.
Listen, when you are 4-14, there is no way you should get a first-round bye at sub-state.
No.
That's ridiculous. And that's where this is a perfect example. If you want the poster child of what Keisha needs to do better, this is a great example of you reseed. If you are insisting on keeping these two divisions in 1A, fine, I guess. I still don't like it, but fine. Then reseed it.
Well,
reseed it. And reseed 3A, reseed 2A. The travel thing is not even an issue anymore. Schools and administrations, I've already talked to multiple ones. First of all, the Beloit girls went 2.5 hour bus ride to Council Grove in the first round. Okay? I mean, that was a first-round game. You talked about it. What was the first-round game? Was it who had to play? Oberlin had to come all the way down to where?
To Downs.
To Downs. Yeah, that's a long
Downs
drive.
Downs to Oberlin for the girls.
Right.
I mean, we know Matt Smith from 8-Man Football, right? He's the principal at Rawlins County now, and he came up and said hi to me last night. I was like, how long is it actually? Because I didn't have to make the trip. I didn't look at what the distance was. So it's 3 hours from Rawlins County to Soap. This is for semis.
This is for semis, three hours.
For the sub-state. You're driving 3 hours back-to-back nights, by the way, because Rawlins County girls are coming down tonight too.
Right.
And so it's
Are they complaining about the travel?
They're not.
No, because they know that's what it is.
Yeah. And exactly, that's what it is. So
let's quit making the excuses that we put these in these pods to save schools money and geographically locate them. Schools aren't afraid to travel, so I think we need to get to a point where we got, and maybe the vote wouldn't be what I think it is, but if schools don't vote for what's best for, and some, of course, they're going to always vote for what's best for their school, so even if their team doesn't deserve to go to state, they'll still vote for the best way to get to state. I get it. But at the same time, if you want the best state basketball tournaments, you want the best teams to make it to state, then if it ever was left up to a vote, these school administrators, whoever's in charge of voting, each member school, you've got to sit here and go, this is silly. This is flat out silly. We have a system where we're already traveling a long way in the first and second round of sub-state, and that's the excuse on why we have to stay in our certain pods. Split it east-west, split it north-south, whatever you want to do. Reseed the one side of the state, reseed the other side of the state. Do what they do in the bigger classes. It's not that difficult. How do I know it's not difficult? Because they're doing it in the bigger classes. It's not that hard, okay? And you reseed it. Simple as that. And then you don't have Heston versus Cheney in the sub-state final. You don't have number one and number two, Beloit and Scott City, years back in the sub-state final. You don't have three of the top 10 girls teams in the same sub-state at Goodland. And oh, by the way, Goodland, Phillipsburg, and TMP, or excuse me, Goodland, Phillipsburg, yeah, TMP, that's right. Mm-hmm. Goodland, Phillipsburg, TMP, are they anywhere close to each other? None of them. So
yeah,
two are in the same league.
Yeah.
But that's you talk about three different points on a map to the western part of the state, and those three are in the same sub-state. I mean, come on. Let's reseed this thing. Let's actually have legitimate state basketball tournaments where we have the eight best teams there. And when you have two or three of the best teams in the state in the same sub-state, and you have teams with losing records that are a one seed in a sub-state in 1A, when you have teams with four wins getting first-round byes and only have to win two games to make it to state, it's time to change, people. If you really want what's best and get the best of the best to actually have legitimate championships, then it is time to fix this. And if you don't want to split you don't want to get rid of the divisions, okay, then at least let's see what could happen if we reseed it by east, west, or north, south. I don't care which direction you want to do it. Because you're already got teams traveling in the first round 2-3 hours, or in the semis 2-3 hours. If you make it east, west, you're not going to have anything much more than that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have a much better sub-state tournaments. You wouldn't have anybody talking right now about a 1-18 team winning a sub-state. That wouldn't even be possible. I mean, it would be, but it'd be far-fetched because you'd have a team in there that's probably 18-2 or 20-0. Instead, you got an 8-10 team as a one seed. This can easily be fixed. How do I know? First of all, the higher classes can do it. Secondly, I've got a guy that's pretty doggone smart, and he didn't need a whole bunch of staff in Topeka to figure out the system.
Mm-hmm.
He put it all out there on social media, and I actually saw the teams that I usually cover would have had shorter road trips than the current system. Are you kidding me? That makes it a win-win. So it's time to get out of the Stone Age. It's time to move into the 21st century, and let's do what's right, and let's get the best teams, the cream of the crop, into the state tournaments. And then we can have one hell of a week of state basketball instead of teams with losing records or teams that are 20-1 sitting at home, teams that are 18-2 sitting at home, and we got teams that are 10-10 that go, or 12-11, or in this case, 4-18 possibly with Central Plains, or even Lost Springs Center going in at 11-10. That's still not good either, by the way. No, but nobody with double-digit losses should make a state tournament unless they win three games.
If you were eight,
but not two games. I'm talking win three games.
I've seen it happen where a team gets hot, 5A, 6A,
they're a six seed, yeah,
and had 10 losses going in, and then finished 13-10 and went to the state tournament.
And sometimes they can play a lot of better competition on their schedule, so their record's a little bit deceiving.
Yeah,
when they go into sub-state. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah,
I mean that can happen.
Sure,
but it shouldn't be free.
Right. And I understand it, and 4A, 5A, and 6A, and I know 4A for sure because I looked at it last night. I know that you only have to win two games to get to state, okay? I do get that. And that's that's because you have less schools in those classes, yeah. Right? And here's a question.
5A, 6A, you only have to win two to get to state,
right,
too.
Right. So you have 32 in each class.
Yeah.
Okay? So here's my question. If we're going to keep insisting on splitting 1A, we did split 4A at one point, and then they redesigned everything. We have 64 in 3A. Why don't we split 3A into two? Let's just water that down too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just water it down. See, to me, it's either let's take a side here. Let's be consistent. You want to split it into two divisions to make everybody more happy, more teams go to state and get participation medals all the time. Fine. Then let's go ahead and split all the classifications that are 64 or more. Split them into two divisions, and let's water it down and be consistent all the way through. Or let's not have split divisions. You know, you have 100 teams in 1A. Then, you know, the 1A tournament was always the best tournament all those years when it was just one division. You had the best of the best, and you had to do something super special to win a state title. It's just not as difficult as it once was. And I'm not saying that's horrible, but when you have teams with bad records making it to state or, you know, running roughshod to the sub-state final, and you have teams with not even a single winning record in a six-team sub-state and a four-win team getting a bye, that is the poster child, perfect example of saying we need change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started right when they split the first time, and we saw these things coming.
We saw it coming. It was
so what did we say? We said, okay, 1A didn't have a choice when it went back together, and I understand that,
sure.
Right? Because they just lumped them in with that whole new setup for classifications. They had zero choice in the matter because they knew it was going to be voted in favor to change it back, and that ended up putting 1A back together. Well, 1A didn't like that for the 2 years. Well, I mean, some 1A did, some 1A didn't. So they had the 2 years where it was just 1A again, and then, again, it came up to split 1A. Well, nobody else votes on that except 1A because that's all it affects, right?
Right.
And so, again, same thing happened like it did the first time. 1A decided to split based on the vote. And so when that happened, we all said, okay, fine, split. Fix your system.
Fix the system.
And Keisha literally came out and said, we're going to look at all the numbers and things like this, and we're going to analyze the best fit and this, and it almost sounded like they were going to have something different. And the only thing they changed was the days of the first round.
And the reason they did that wasn't because of really their idea. It was because of a shortage of officials.
Shortage of officials. That's the only thing they changed.
Yeah, they didn't think outside the box at all.
It's like, it's literally the same tournament, except now you're making teams wait 10 days.
Yes.
You're rewarding a team for a first round bye and making them wait 9 or 10 days to play their next game after their regular season's over.
Correct.
That's not good for anybody.
No.
So run this thing through, play it when you want to play it, and let's move on. And I mean, first round bye, you're going to have that wait anyway. But this is just the way it's set up. It's like, okay, if you played these on Thursday and Friday, again, it's official shortage, so you can't play the semis on Monday and Tuesday, but I think a lot of coaches didn't like that part of it.
Sure.
They have to wait around to play their next game. But again, the system is what needed change. I've always said, like, okay, if you want to split 1A, you want to split 1A. That's fine. I can live with it. But when you're consistently just keeping this regional format or sub-state format where you think all the teams have to be in the same place when they're actually not anyway.
Exactly.
It's like,
does anybody look at
what
a map?
What are you gaining here? Like, I always go back to Lincoln. I mean, Lincoln had to go to Clifton Clyde. There is a sub-state 18 miles away in the same county. In the same county.
And they get shipped to Clifton
and you're
Clyde.
Going to Clifton Clyde.
Makes total sense, doesn't
and
it?
And Rollins County is coming to Sylvan Grove.
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
So
remember, it's all about travel.
The system needs changed.
It's
and
a
you
broken
can't
system.
Hide behind travel anymore. You just can't do it.
It needs major change and overhaul, and I don't think it's going to happen. That's what's really frustrating to me.
Yes.
Okay, Tatum, Tejas, Peters.
Yeah, I want to go through the rest of the games tonight in sub-state because
okay.
We went into right our games that were on the radio and
okay.
We had other people asking what
oh, okay.
the other games were tonight. And then
Sorry.
We'll talk about Tatum as well. Again, sub-state, 1A Division 2, Beloit High School, St. John's Tipton, the girls' semifinals tonight. Thunder Ridge plays Logan Palco at 6, and then St. John's Tipton against Pike Valley at 7:30. And at Clifton Clyde, Rock Hills will get things going on the girls' side. They had a first-round bye. They play Washington County in 1A Division 1 sub-state semis at 6. It is Clifton Clyde against Blue Valley Randolph in the other game there. there. You can find full brackets and everything you need to know about Substate basketball, as we mentioned, at ncksports.com.
St. John's Tipton Girls, the only team with a winning record in their Substate.
Yeah.
But at least there's somebody with a winning record in that Substate.
And they're obviously a favorite to come out of that.
Absolutely.
And we'll see how that all plays out for them here coming up tonight and tomorrow night. So, yeah, everything at ncksports.com. Tejan Peters as well. Wade just said Tatum Tejan Peters has signed a letter of intent to play college tennis at Pratt Community College. She did that on Thursday, and her and Ashlyn Knight finished in 12th place at state. They went 19-13. Pratt's a school that didn't have a tennis program for a lot of years. They had one, and then they got rid of it just this last year.
So they had it when I was growing up.
They brought it back just this past season. And so Tatum's part of just the second new class of players that are coming in for Pratt tennis coming up as a freshman there in the 22-23 season for Tatum Tejan Peters. So congratulations to her. And again, you can read more about that and see more at ncksports.com.
Instead of saying Tatum Tejan Peters, I thought about, you know, trying to shorten it, you know, and play by play. And sometimes I'll just say Tejan's or Tejan Peters. But then I thought TTP. But then the way my mouth would work, it'd be I'd somehow skip a T and go TP, and that's not good. No, yeah. We don't want to be calling her TP.
Oh, you get caught up like Billy Madison, right? Today, Junior?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that ain't good either. That's right. Hey, the Beloit Wrestling Club has 11 wrestlers from Beloit and Tipton. They're going to be competing in the District 4 Championships in Hayes tomorrow. So best of luck to those 11 wrestlers from the Beloit Wrestling Club, District 4 Championships in Hayes coming up tomorrow. All right, we shift into college basketball, where KU bounced back, grinding out a win last night over TCU.
Baugh gets it into Miles. Not fouling yet. Miles to midcourt. Miles all the way inside. Blocked by Wando. Harris with the block. And with 2.8 seconds to go, Wilson gets the rebound. DeJuan Harris having the half of his career. He has been huge here in the second.
DeJuan Harris, 11 points on 5-9 shooting, clutch three-pointer late during the stretch. He gave Kansas control, comes up with that block. For some reason, the Miles kid for TCU down three decided to drive it to the hoop with 4 seconds to go, and you're down three. I didn't understand it, but still a great block by Harris. Bill Self, his team wasn't perfect, but he's still happy with the W.
That was a great basketball game. We played so good early, and then we went to the bench, and then they came back on us, and then we had total control, and Mitch gets the technical in the first half, which was a really bad play because the official basically just warned him, if you guys don't shut up, I'm going to give you a T, and then we teased him up 3 seconds later. So, but, you know, we did some good things. We competed harder on the glass. You know, they got one offensive rebound the second half, which is much better, but, you know, they scored so many easy baskets, though, off of our miscues defensively, you know. A lot of things we can tighten up, but no reason for apologies.
So KU 24-6, ranked 6th in the country, 13-4 in the Big 12, tied with Baylor atop the Big 12 standings. And Baylor gets to host Iowa State at 5 o'clock on Saturday tomorrow. KU back in action tomorrow. They will host Texas. Texas ranked 21st in the country. KU lost at Texas, a game they should have won, but lost by 3. Texas won at Allen Fieldhouse a year ago. It is senior day for the Jayhawks. 6 seniors playing their final game for KU. So there'll be a longer post game and the speeches with the seniors after the game coming up tomorrow. Pregame at 2:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. It's pretty simple. If KU wins, they get a share of the Big 12 title. And if Baylor then would lose, KU gets the title outright. If KU loses and Baylor wins, Baylor gets the title outright. If KU and Baylor both win, they share the title. If KU and Baylor both lose and Texas Tech wins, there would be a three-way tie for the Big 12 championship, believe it or not. TCU is at West Virginia tomorrow. Texas Tech at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma at K-State at 3 o'clock tomorrow. K-State, Wildcats having a tough time, of course, at 14-15. Texas at KU, as I mentioned, and Iowa State at Baylor. Wichita State Shockers, they're going to be back in action. They're 14-12 overall, 5-9 in AAC, and the Shockers will be in action coming up this weekend as they will be playing East Carolina. Senior day for the Shockers as they host East Carolina tomorrow at 2 o'clock at Coke Arena in Wichita. Big 12 women's basketball, the K-State women will be in action on the road at TCU at 1 o'clock tomorrow, and the KU women will be at Oklahoma. Mike Krzyzewski, it will be his final game as a head coach for Duke at Cameron Indoor Stadium. It is the final home game for Duke and Coach K. Of course, he announced his retirement for the beginning of the season. This is last year. And, of course, Duke's going to finish up with their home finale against chief rival North Carolina. And how about this one? Tickets for the game are fetching prices, usually reserved for the Super Bowl. The cheapest seats on Vivid Seats now are going for $3,450 to be at the Duke, North Carolina game at Cameron. And it reports that some of the best seats on the market for Coach K's finale, $50,000. Man, people have way too much money if you're paying $50,000 to watch a coach in his final game at home. It's not even his final game. It's his final game at home for Duke. $50,000 for some of the best seats in the house for Duke, North Carolina tomorrow. $34.50 for the cheap seats. And when I say cheap, to me that's not cheap. $34.50 for a seat, but that is the cheapest seats. Okay, and we close the show with this. As we know, Major League Baseball's owners locked out the players. Jason Hayward came out, and he just basically called out the owners. And this is an outfielder for the Cubs. And he has a picture of Rob Manfred, who was laughing at times when he announced they were canceling games. Smiling, seemed to be in a really good mood. And that rubbed the players really wrong. Mm-hmm. That's the leader of Major League Baseball, although he works for the owners, clearly. And I want to read this post on Instagram by Jason Hayward because I think he's absolutely dead spot on. He goes, "The look on Rob Manfred's face is a sigh of relief. He thought the players were about to accept the deal and we were going to start the season, which all along he didn't want to start on time. Numbers, rule changes, CBTs, Super 2s, league minimums, extended playoffs, pitch clocks, shifts, international drafts, etc. All of these things and more put to the side. From the last day of the former collective bargaining agreement to the good faith extended deadline to March 1st, they, Rob Manfred and whoever signed up to follow, have been operated with the intent to delay this season. Period. Similar to the 2020 pandemic season, they drag things out because they have their ideal amount of games they hope we play during the season. They know the proposals they made were geared towards benefiting them significantly enough that if the players ever elected to accept the terms, it would be a big win for the owners and a huge loss for the current and future players of baseball. Each time both sides went to the table, they chose to acknowledge bits and pieces of what needed to be discussed to delay and drag out the whole process. They continued to make offers they knew were in the players that they know were in the players' best interest to refuse, hoping both sides could continue to disagree and that they would get their end goal, their goal of delaying the 2022 MLB season. Bottom line, they know the amount of games we need to play in order for them to profit. They view the first month of the season as debt. Season delayed equals they meet their goals. As players, all of us make different amounts of money each year, regardless of the contract we went into these negotiations in hopes of actually discussing the game we thought they cared about. The outcome to this date has been one side in the players, negotiating with ourselves because the other side wants division and they truly don't care to play the scheduled 162 games. That's the route they chose." To add a little bit of substance to what he's saying, the TV contracts in Major League Baseball, there are no refunds or rebates to the networks until you get about 138 to 150 games. In April, attendance is the lowest it is of any month during the Major League Baseball season because, one, it's really cold in some of these cities and outdoor stadiums. That's a big part of it. TV ratings aren't great in April because you're finishing up the NCAA tournament, so forth and so on. You got the NFL draft in April. There are many other things going on. So there are things in the contracts to where that the Major League Baseball owners know, even if we lose the first two series of the season, which they've canceled, mm-hmm. or even if they cancel half of the month of April, or even the full month of April, they're not going to have to give much back to the networks, if anything at all. Where they're going to really want, they're going to want to start the season for sure May 1st. That's when they're going to start losing money. The owners are going to start losing money May 1st. So they look at it as, hey, we can somehow delay this season. We don't have to pay the players for games that aren't played because we locked them out. And then when we do get to the games where we really make money, yeah, they get paid, but the owners don't really lose much money at all by not having these games in April. And that's what a lot of people that immediately, like I say, the lazy thing, well, it's millionaires versus billionaires and blah, 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 and they don't understand the nature of the beast. This thing is stacked against the players. It always is, always has, and, you know, maybe rightfully so. The owners own the team. It's their business. I get that. But this all adds up to, and how can Rob Manfred be so jovial? That's the thing. Mm-hmm. He said it'd be a horrible disaster if we didn't start the season on time 2 months ago. Then, right when they talked about the lockout, they went 42 days and didn't even present a proposal to the union. 42 days without anything proposed. It's very clear that this is what they wanted. And they basically were like, listen, if the players in the union are dumb enough to take one of these deals, then yeah, we'll start the season on time. And if they don't, well, we're okay with waiting till April to get something done, or late March. And then if we miss some games in April, big deal, because we don't have to pay, we don't have to refund ESPN or Fox any money because it's in the contract to where it's, I think, 138 to 152, somewhere in that range is when they start have to give back some money because games aren't aired. So think about that. The networks are paying for a 162-game schedule, but in essence, they're really only paying for 150 or less because the league is protected based on the contract that those networks decided to sign. So the owners are like, listen, we don't got a lot of people in the stands in April, and we have, you know, the money. We don't have to pay the players now. So they probably look at it and go, hey, that's kind of a wash. If not, we might come out ahead a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's worth the risk, because if we can get the players to fall for one of our deals and they get antsy because they want to play because they're the ones that are going to be losing money, we might get exactly what we want. And then we start the season on time, or we don't, but we get them to fall for something that we know is more one-sided. And honestly, it's a brilliant strategy by the owners. As much as I hate to say it, it's a pretty solid strategy business-wise, cutthroat. It's that you're trying to force the hand, you're trying to break the union, you're trying to get players that really need the money really badly, more than you do, of course, as a billionaire owner. You're trying to get them to break the union, you're trying to create some discourse in the union, you're trying to get the players to say, listen, I just want to play, so they forget what they're fighting for, and then you hope they come to the table and they get desperate and they say, yeah, we'll sign basically anything. We'll go with it. Fine. And then you're locked into it for the next 5 years. And that's what the players are fighting for, not just now, but in the future. They don't want to go through this again. They don't trust the owners. So the owners, from a business standpoint, this happens all the time in corporate America. Happens all the time. It's just that it's not public because it's not a major entertainment industry. You know, like Wall Street and banks and whatever it might be. This stuff happens all the time in business. You know, one tries to strong arm the other. But in this case, it's bad PR for Major League Baseball. But I think the owners are naive enough to think, listen, and maybe not naive, fans will be there. I mean, the fans came back after 94. Yeah, you can argue sitting here listening right now, well, I never came back. Well, did you watch one game on TV? You were back. Did you pull up highlights on your phone? You were back. Did you go to one game? You were back. Did you pay $12 for a beer at a stadium? You were back. Okay? Probably 95 to 98, 99% of fans came back eventually, because that was 28 years ago when the strike occurred, all right? That's almost three decades. And some of those people that said they weren't coming back are literally not coming back. They're dead now. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the older fans from 94 might not be alive anymore. So the owners are like, listen, the fans will still be there. And the players are going, we want to play. We never said we didn't want to play. We're being locked out. It's the ultimate economical weapon. And when things will actually get interesting, I think now, based on all this knowledge that I dropped on you, is really... They just met again yesterday after sitting a few days out. And to me, if you really want to get something done, you should be talking every day. So that, to me, tells me that obviously both sides are far apart. I think you're going to see more than just two series being canceled. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see possibly all of April wiped out. And it's a black eye for the sport. And once again, 40,000 stadium workers, along with other people that, you know, do some of the smaller stuff in the office, marketing people, promotions people, you know, people that dress up as Slugger the mascot, that's probably a stadium worker. People doing concessions. These are the people that are hurt by this significantly, financially, because of the greed of the owners and then the players trying to, you know, stand firm. And one thing the players got going for them is they have one of the strongest unions in the world. And that gives them the opportunity to do this. And for those that hate on the Players Association and the union, let me tell you something. Whatever job you work at, if you don't have a union, you would love to have a union. You would love to have an organization that backed you up, that fought for your rights and for whatever else, for what was best for you, the employees. You want a union like Major League Baseball. You do. You absolutely want this type of union, where right now they seem to be more unified and solidified than ever before. They have hunkered down and said, we got to fight for what we need, because the owners are getting 30% more in revenues the last 5 years, and our salaries have gone down by an average of 4% to 5%. That doesn't make sense. There's more and more pie being funneled to the owners, where they get fat and happier, and we're the ones getting less, and they're making it off of us. We are the product. We are the major asset. If we don't play, and I'll end with this, like Jeff Passan said, you can wipe out the 1,200 players and replace them with 1,200 new players, and your product suffers greatly. You wipe out the 30 owners right now and assign 30 new owners, the game will continue to go and will be just fine.
Yeah, it's crazy when you look at all that. You're talking about the players' union and wanting that more of that pie that they get, right? And,
sure.
And so I read a comment yesterday on one of the posts. It was just a public post from some sports thing that I follow on Facebook. And somebody got on there and said, just because my company had more revenue in 1 year and made more money, that doesn't mean I'm entitled to more wages. And I'm like, well, you must not think much of yourself as a worker if you're actually saying that publicly, right? Because that absolutely is not right. You are entitled to more wages. If you're doing your job and making your company more profitable, you are entitled to more wages.
And
that's how America works.
That's
how a capitalistic society works.
Exactly.
Somebody else came back and said, well, obviously they could probably replace you tomorrow then. if you don't think you're entitled to more wages. Like,
right.
You're obviously replaceable then if you don't think enough of yourself that you should get a raise if your company is more profitable. And it's just like, I 100% agree with that. Like, I'm not, you know, if you sat steady here and you're begging for more money and the teams aren't making money, then I see where people could say players just want more money,
sure.
Right? But when your profit margins are up like that and you can't get a raise to reflect that, people don't know who the star owner is of every team. But if you look at who the players are, people know Fernando Tatis, you know, people know
Mike Trout,
Max Scherzer, Mike Trout, these guys that are making the big bucks, Clayton Kershaw, that are making the money for your team. And that's their public image is what brings fans into the game. It's not, George Steinbrenner was, you know, probably one that was maybe above the rest as far as how we recognize owners and know who they are in baseball. But other than that, nobody knows who John Sherman is, right?
It's a rigged game against the players in any sport from the standpoint that they are the faces of the game, okay? And Major League Baseball does a poor job of marketing
their
stars.
They're not just that part of it. Yeah.
But they are the faces of the game no matter what sport it is. And they're the ones that answer the questions after the game in a post-game conference. They and the coaches. They're the ones that are answering tough questions or after every game, right after they shower, they got a microphone or microphones in front of them and they haven't put their shirt on yet, okay? Do you see the owners being interviewed after the games?
No.
And that's exactly how they want it. You know, when the player says something controversial, then the owner might say, well, that doesn't represent what our organization stands for, blah, 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 blah. Well, it's got to be very convenient to be rich and spoiled and sit in a Barca lounger up in a suite and look upon your team and never let the fans, at least if you're more of a quiet behind-the-scenes owner, don't even know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens? A lot of fans end up going, well, it's the players. That's the ones I know. I'm going to blame them because you can't even name the owner. And that's where it starts. The whole organization starts at the top with the owner. That's the top peg of the totem pole, for crying out loud. And I'll bet you there's a lot of Royals fans that can't even tell you who their owner is right now.
Yeah, that's what I said. John Sherman, like,
a lot of them, I bet, don't.
If you walk down the street and walk past the
you
man,
wouldn't know
he's
the
a
guy.
Normal-looking guy. You wouldn't know him.
I wouldn't either, by the way. I know what he looks like, but I wouldn't like go, oh, there's John Sherman.
I'd say until the Royals made the World Series and became relevant, if you walk past David Glass, oh, that's just an old man. I don't know who that is.
Right.
No, we didn't know.
But
him.
If you walk by George Brett, you know who he
Absolutely.
Is. If you walk by Salvador Perez, you know who he
yeah.
is.
I walked
by Whit Merrifield, you know who he
Danny
is.
I walked by Danny Duffy in a stairwell one time at Kauffman Stadium, and I knew who he was, right? Like,
and ruined his career when you touched him.
Yeah. I was like, he's not a superstar, right?
No,
but
you knew
it's pretty easy to see him and be like, oh, that guy's going to work today with his backpack on and ready to go.
And isn't it funny that all of the press and the FaceTime is players and coaches, you know, before games, after games, spring training, blah, blah, all the interviews, all the access, so forth and so on. They're on billboards and when sports promote them, right? Blah, blah, blah. And the owners, you know, are quiet and behind the scenes. But it is interesting when it's time to have both sides heard, ESPN cuts in and runs the commissioner's live press conference. Major League Baseball dumps out of the Players Association press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you tell me if that ain't rigged. If the owners want the FaceTime, they will get the FaceTime.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want the FaceTime because they know it works great. You know, out of sight, out of mind. Honestly, that's the great way to explain it. Out of sight, out of mind.
And they can also, to be fair to Rob Manfred, which is we don't do that very much, right? They can also make him their whipping boy, too.
Well, like, they
put him in front of everybody.
Well, that's what they're doing.
Exactly.
Everybody's
we don't
like,
have to do anything. We don't have to talk right now. Rob's
talking,
got us.
Everybody's talking about he's Rob Manfred. You should have seen the New York Post, the New York Times front cover with him, Unhappy Gilmore. He's practicing a fake golf swing in a stairwell after he just announced or was going to announce canceling baseball games. He's getting ripped and vilified. Mm. But he's taking all of the knives and the bullets for the owners. And that's what the owners want, is a whipping boy. They want a commissioner to stand up in front and take all the arrows. That's what NFL owners have with Roger Goodell. The thing is, Roger Goodell, that their league has been much more successful. They haven't had as many stoppages. And Roger Goodell, by the way, I think he's a guy with some major backbone. I'm not sure about Rob Manfred.
Nah,
and I think
he
is a yes man. But that is true. Rob Manfred is being paid a lot of money to basically shield all the owners from all of this. Why isn't, to me, what you should be demanding, which you won't get, but a fan base, you should be demanding and saying the owners should be coming out and talking about this. They should come out, each owner of each team, and have a press conference, explain to the fans why the games are being canceled. Of course not. Of course not. Mm-hmm. They got one voice box, and that's a commissioner. So then when everybody gets all mad as hell about things with baseball, they blame one guy. And once again, the owners get off scot-free. You blame the players, the owners get off scot-free. You blame the commissioner, the owners get off scot-free. You've got 30 Major League Baseball owners, all white, I believe, all right, that are billionaires. First of all, you wouldn't know if they're white or black anyway. You never see them, but there are 30 owners, and nobody's going nuts. They can't even say, well, I'm upset and mad as heck at, oh, God, what's the owner of my team again?
Yeah.
But Salvador Perez dropped his luggage and turned his ankle. I know all about that.
Yeah.
But I don't even know who the owner of my team is. I'm mad. Well, you know what? I'll just lay it all on the players. That's who I know. Or you know what? I love the players. They're in the right. Owners are in the wrong. But I don't know the owners, so I'm going to scream and yell at Rob Manfred. He's the problem. He's the one that's doing all this. No. The owners are telling Rob Manfred what they want to do. Rob Manfred is simply carrying out what the owners want to do. Rob Manfred doesn't represent the players. He represents the owners. He's the commissioner representing the owners. He is a lackey for the owners. And yet it's working perfectly for the owners. Some people still in society today are blaming the players. And that's the owners are just sitting there going, God, how gullible can people be? They got to be sitting there just laughing their butts off while they wipe their noses with Benjamins. They just got to be loving this. And then they got to love, hey, look at our boy Rob, man. Dude, look at that. Can you believe Rob actually laughed? I mean, he was giggling during the conference when we canceled games. Can you believe that? That was perfect, Rob. Way to go, baby. Now people aren't even talking about us. They're talking about Rob. Manfred, what a clever name. This is great. This is why we pay that guy a lot of money. He's done exactly what we want him to do, and we don't even have to take the responsibility, and we're the guys that own the dang franchises. It's brilliant setup. It's absolutely brilliant. And so we will see how the world continues to turn with Major League Baseball. I think a lot of fans are to the point where, like, I don't even care anymore. And I still care, but I will say my life will move on without baseball. And if there is baseball, will I go to a game? Yeah, I will. I'll go to the Royals. I'll go to a Royals game. I might not go to as many as I have, although I haven't recently because of COVID. But it's fun to take the kids. I'd like to do it. And I probably will still go to a game. I'm not going to write off baseball, okay? But I can understand where people get to the point where, like, dude, I don't need baseball. Listen, I've said this. I'm a gigantic sports fan. If there were no sports tomorrow, I'd still live. We saw it with COVID. Basically, the sports world was shut down. And I'm still here. Knock on wood, you're still here. And we found ways to fill time talking sports. We found ways to go back and run some classic stuff for high school broadcasts. You adapt. You move. You got other things in life. You know, sports are great. Sports are fun. But if your entire life revolves around sports, you know, that could be a problem for you at some point in time. If your world revolves around baseball, you got a problem right now.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So the key is don't put all your eggs in one basket,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
Have different interests and hobbies. Maybe you love sports, you follow sports, but you play sports. Well, here's the thing. Nobody's stopping you and locking you out from playing co-ed softball. You can go play volleyball. You can go play whatever sport you want if you're healthy enough. So you can still be involved in sports. And who cares if the professional franchise called Major League Baseball decides, we're going to cancel games. You're going to move on. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not losing any sleep. Major League Baseball isn't having games in April. I would like them to have them, but I'm losing sleep over it. But I'll tell you, the people that are losing sleep, 40,000 people without a job that they counted on because the billionaire owners don't want to give more of the pie to the players, even though the pie has increased by 30% over the last 5 years.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.